Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and joining me today as my co-host is Randy. Welcome, Randy.
Hi, Sean. Hi, everybody. Glad to be back for another fun episode.
So, Randy, what are we talking about today? Who are we talking to?
We actually have two guests on with us today. And the first one we have is Priscilla Gagné, who is a Paralympic athlete, and we'll get into more of that. And we also have on Ali Briggs, who happens to be one of my best friends.
Wow, how cool.
And we brought them both together today because the topic we're going to start on is judo, and kind of more specifically, Paralympic judo.
Awesome. Well, welcome, Ali and Priscilla.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Where do we start? Let's start with, what is judo?
Ali?
you gave that one to me. All right.
Yep.
I sort of describe it to most people as akin to wrestling. It's a full contact sport, but sort of from a Japanese origin. So there's a little bit of culture to it and some respect and discipline built into it. And I think it's a very natural sort of segue into Paralympic visually impaired sport, because there's very little component of sight in it. Even as a fully sighted person, it's not something I use a lot in judo. So I think it's a good fit for Paralympic sport.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so Priscilla, you have a visual impairment. Can you describe what you can see?
Sure. So my vision impairment is retinitis pigmentosa, or RP. And I have, right now I have only peripheral vision and a little vision down below. So if I look straight, I only have light reception, and it's almost like extremely thick algae on a fish tank. But then on the sides, I got 4 degrees of pretty good, in my definition of good, vision. So I can see high contrast. Obviously, I still can't read or make eye contact or anything like that. But yeah, I can get around pretty good with the high contrast and use a white cane. At night, I see nothing. It's just pitch black, or even in dimly lit restaurants, it's completely dark for me.
Right. I can relate. Same eye condition here. So how long have you guys been, is it called playing judo, doing judo? What do you say? How do you speak judo?
Probably doing judo or practicing judo.
Okay, right. How long have you been practicing judo?
I've been doing it since I was 23, so it's been 11 years now. Oh my goodness.
It's been right around 20 for me.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, because Ali, you started pretty young, right?
Yeah, I started 6 years old, so a little over 20 years now.
And is that because your family was doing it? They put you in it?
Oh, this is a fairly entertaining story. I told my grade one teacher that sports were for boys and I would rather play with my baby doll. And my parents thought that was deeply unacceptable and put me in the most rough and tumble sports they could find in our small town, which was judo.
I love that.
And just so everyone knows, she's a killer judo player. So it's hilarious to me that that's how she started.
Ah, thanks, Priscilla.
We did all play with a lot of baby dolls as our friend group.
We did.
So Priscilla, how did you start playing judo then? 23 is quite different than 5 and a half.
Yeah, it's quite old. I was the complete opposite. I was wanting to be one of the boys, so air quotes. So I, whatever my brother did, I would do. So I was always doing something rough and tumbly, you know, like at home tag team wrestling, doing whatever, football, hockey. In high school, I finally got to join an organized wrestling team, which was for the visually impaired, but we only competed against able-bodied. They didn't have enough of us to have our own, quote, league. So then graduated from high school, graduated from college, started doing goalball, which was fun, but I really missed the aggression and the adrenaline and everything that you get from an impact sport. So I started judo at 23.
I have a question for Priscilla. So you mentioned your vision and that you obviously started judo later on as an activity in life. Has there been any, have you had a substantial vision change at any point, or has it stayed relatively the same through your life?
It's definitely changed. So it's kind of wobbled a lot. So I started out fully legally blind, still able to read with help of glasses and everything, like really thick glasses, able to read a couple numbers in the phone book. That was my eye exercise every day, was to try to read a phone number in the phone book. I could kind of read the chalkboard if I was sitting in the front row and if it was a black chalkboard, not a green. But then, you know, fast forward to probably early 20s, I was seeing really good. I was wearing contacts and I could see 20 over 80, but still with just the 16 degrees of peripheral. And then probably around 24, 25, it very slowly, I was out of school, so I didn't really notice it at first, went from that to the algae getting thicker and thicker and thicker to the point where I couldn't even see a person standing in front of me. I thought I could, but the brain plays tricks on you. So it was filling in the gap and I thought I was seeing what I was seeing and I totally wasn't. And I didn't know that until I had to read something. So that was like the wake up for me, like, oh my goodness. And then the 16 degrees went to 4 degrees and that's that. Yeah. So, and it's been plateaued since then. And so that's 10 years now.
So how did you guys, because Allie's from a small town in British Columbia, same one Randy's from, coincidentally, and Priscilla's from Ontario. So how the heck did you guys get together?
I was training in Montreal for a year, which is our national training center. So both the Paralympic and the Olympic team train there. And it was just very organically out of practice. I had no idea who Priscilla was. We're approximately the same size, which is relevant in judo to have somebody that's approximately your same weight division. I just saw she needed a partner. And so we worked together on some sort of technique, couldn't even tell you what. And I think her coach, liked the way we worked together. And so we paired up a little more often.
So maybe you can explain what is training in judo look like? So you need a partner, obviously. Yeah. How are you going to practice all your moves? But, you know, what's an average training session like?
Well, you start out, you know, pre-COVID, you start out, everyone lines up, and at the training center, there's anywhere between 50 and, I don't know, during a training camp, probably close to 200 people at any given time. And so everybody lines up, you do the bout, and then you start running around the mats for warm-ups. So you're running in a ginormous circle. And you follow the leader, whoever's warming it up, and then you go into drills. So you need a partner where you're doing static movement on your partner or moving drills, but you can't do them alone. And all of those drills are designed to just warm your body up and activate your muscles. And then after the drills, we go into what we call randori, which is where you're fighting basically mock fights. So you're fighting for about anywhere between 4 and 5 minutes, depending on how long they want you to fight for that night. And then you switch about 2 minutes off, and then you switch again, and you just do that for the rest of the night. So that's impossible to do judo without a partner.
And so are you generally with the same partner every practice?
Generally, yes. For those that are fortunate enough to have a full-time training partner, then yeah, you're pretty much it's clicky. So people tend to stick with the people that they know and that they enjoy working with.
So when you first started, I'd imagine you're probably the only visually impaired person.
No, there's one other, Justin Karn. He's a B2. So he sees a little bit better than I do. But he's still a visually impaired fighter and fights. He went to the London Games back in 2012. And so he trains at the INS as well.
Okay. But when you show up for practice, like, were you scared the first time? Like, I don't have a partner. I don't really know how this is going to go. Like, what's that like?
Scared isn't the word. More frustrated, because I knew what I was getting into when I moved to Montreal. And actually, when I met Allie, I wasn't living here yet, I don't think. Was I? No.
Because I feel like not yet.
Not yet, yeah. The first time, anyway. Right. Yeah. So anyway, because you had moved back, but anyways, fast forward. So, I would show up to practice, and it was everything psychologically. It was everything I could do to just get out of the house. Cause I'd have my judo gi packed. even in the winter, have my winter gear on and ready to go, put my hand on the door handle. And it was like this mental battle of, do I really want to face this tonight? Am I up for it? And it wasn't the physical part. It was standing on the side, begging people to train, you know, being walking up to a group of people and they all scatter because they know I'm going to ask. And then end up having to do the warm-ups on the bike, the stationary bike. So that was pre-Ally, and that was the most frustrating part. It wasn't that I was scared. It was that it was dread. I was dreading it. And I loved judo. So to me, it was really hard because I had a goal. Like, why can't we just do judo? You know, that's what we're here to do. Can we just put all the other stuff aside and just do judo? And so that's where I was at.
So people were walking away because, do you think, because of your visual impairment, like they didn't want to tackle that challenge?
Well, I mean, and Ally might have more insight coming from the able-bodied world to add to this, but from what I can gather, it was because obviously a vision impaired judoka trains a little differently. We learn a little differently. I'm not as skilled as the visual ones are. So we can do the same movement, but very different. It feels very different. And of course there's the awkwardness. Sometimes I go to grab the lapel and might poke you in the face or, you know, little things like that, that are very annoying. And I don't discount that at all. I know it is. So that's my perception, but maybe Ally has a different, perspective to add to it from what she knows.
Yeah. I agree with what Priscilla said. And I think sort of the other element that people had was just this inability to sort of initiate working with Priscilla. Like, to put it into context, the standard way that you get partners in judo is you put up your hand that says, hey, I need a partner. And then you look around and you just make eye contact with somebody and you kind of nod at each other like, oh yeah, we'll work together. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not going to be a mechanism where Priscilla can get partners. And so to me, it was a very like easy switch. Oh, Priscilla doesn't have sight. I should just tap her on the shoulder and be like, hey, do you have a partner for round two? Like, it was a very easy leap for me. And I don't know that everybody was comfortable making that small change. There was a social barrier that they didn't feel like they could, for whatever reason, reach out to Priscilla.
Wow. Yeah. Seems like such a small thing, but makes a huge difference, right?
Yep, for sure.
So Ally, you grew up knowing Randy. Do you feel like that sort of knowing somebody with a visual impairment made you feel a little more comfortable to just initiate, reach out?
It's hard to say because I've known Randy for, you know, my whole life. We were probably 5 years old or whatever when we met. I never put those dots together. To me, it was just a very natural, you know, I just communicate slightly differently with Priscilla than I might with others. It really wasn't a barrier. But maybe that's in part knowing Randy. I actually don't know.
You went to the Paralympics. Which Paralympics did you go to?
Ally and I went to Rio 2016.
Okay. So explain to me how, like, I went to the Paralympics in tandem cycling. So my guide was on the bike with me. How does it work with judo? What is it? Is Ally your guide or your, like, what is that? How does this process work?
She's a bit of everything. I'll let her fill in too. But she's a training partner. For number one, she was like, because you have to still peak. So you have to be able to train right up until the day of competition. And so, of course, you don't want to go train with your adversaries. So she came as my training partner, as my guide as well. So she obviously goes in to verify things like when we do the weigh-ins. I can't see the scale or see what they're writing down when other people. So she kind of oversees it, makes sure that what gets written down is legitimate and that kind of thing. And helps me to make weight, helps me with food, you know, so during competition, we had to go, you know, eat before the last fight. And so we had to select specific food that would be beneficial to that time release, energy and all that kind of thing. So she was given that responsibility by our coach, Andre. She's a friend, she was a confidant, she was like mental encouragement and motivation. But the role that she came as, I believe, was on paper anyways, was assistant and training partner or sparring partner.
So if you were going to an able-bodied Olympic judo, would you bring your training partner?
I think typically they'll bring a handful of training partners because they bring closer to a full team. Like our team at for the Paralympics at 2016 was Priscilla, who fought in the 52 kilogram division. And the other athlete, I believe he was minus 100. And so those are just not compatible training partners. And so each brought their own training partner.
Okay.
Whether often with the able-bodied team, if you have a 52 player and a 57 player, it's not unreasonable that they train together. So they bring a couple of training partners, but not like one for each athlete.
And so at the Paralympics, do you get all the clothing and all the swag and you get to stay in the village and do all the things?
So interestingly enough, this is the first one. Rio was the very first Paralympics. This is what I'm told because it was my first Paralympics in history that we got all the same clothes, all the same everything as the able-bodied. Before we might get a couple of t-shirts or something and that was it. But this was like the first one where we got full kits.
Cool. Awesome. Oh. But Allie got it all too.
She's like, I got a lot of swag.
Part of the team. Yeah. As you should. As you should.
We didn't stay in the village. We stayed sort of in this like support system. So it was like the team doctors and massage therapy and all that. And it was actually very cool.
Okay. Was that your choice? Could you
stay in the village? No, I don't think so. I think that was the like procedure as a non-athlete that, you know, I would be in the support
right.
hotel. Kind of
yeah. makes sense. Which was a little frustrating because that meant the day of the weigh-ins, she wasn't allowed to come because it was like the opening ceremonies day. So she wasn't allowed to come into the village that day. Nobody was that wasn't an athlete or living in the village. So that was really, really hard. So I had to work with Tony, who's a 100 minus 100 kilo. And so that was a bit of a hurdle.
Well, I know also from being in at the Paralympics that there's a lot of downtime, a lot of meal time, a lot of walking around. Like, what about that? Did you like need a guide to help you get food every day? Or, you know, how did you manage when she wasn't around?
Oh, yeah, she was there for all of that. And my coach, when she wasn't able to be in the village, my coach is the one that does it.
Okay. So, Allie, what was it like being at the Paralympics?
It was really wonderful. This is a super, super cool experience that I'm very grateful to Priscilla and Andre and the team that I could be a part of that. That was a big privilege. In the full Canadian, it was kind of fun in the Canadian sort of, you know, swag outfit. The like local folk in Brazil just would think you were a rock star. Because you were Canadian. And so they would chant Canada at you all the time, which was lots of fun. And people would try to take pictures of me. And I kept being like, oh no, I'm not an athlete. They're like, swimmer? I'm like, nope, not an athlete. And then they would pick another sport. They'd be like, runner? I'm like, nope, not an athlete. Training partner. It like, doesn't matter, Canada. We'll take your picture. So there are many pictures of me floating around Brazil, probably with like random stories that I compete in, you know. I don't. But no, just, and the other element that was really cool was the Paralympic element. And so it sort of combined this, you know, individual athletic pursuit that is the Olympic spirit. And then it also had a little something extra being the Paralympics. And I think staying with the support team, there was sort of this sense among us that we were helping, we were doing something that was a little bit beyond ourselves. Which I think was really special.
And how was it for you, Priscilla?
I wouldn't have had it any other way. There was no more perfect person. I couldn't have handcrafted a more perfect person than Allie to be mm-hmm. the one to not only come to the Paralympics and share that moment with, but also to lead up to it, you know, and it's largely because of her that even happened. Because if I can't train, I can't compete well, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's neat, kind of nostalgic that the person who has taken so many breakfalls for you, the person who is, you know, busting their butt in medical school or like studying for the MCAT. And then when they're not studying for the MCAT, they're training with you and that's their entire life. And for that person to then be able to see the fruit of it and be at the games and see the hype of it too, I think that's super unique and it's special as a bond between friends. It's special as a bond between athletes. But for me, it was just, I only wish I could have meddled to give the ultimate gift to Allie of look what your time has done. That was the biggest disappointment for me, was losing the bronze medal. And I know she would disagree and everybody would say,
what?
But that's how I felt. I felt like, man, I want the bronze medal for me, but I can deal with my disappointment, whatever, I can try again. But I wanted it even more for her because of the work that she put in, the sacrifices that she made that entire year, and Andre as well, but especially Allie. So that was really disappointing for me, not just for me, but for her too, like, if that makes sense.
So, and I would say it wasn't a sacrifice. It was a privilege.
Oh. Of course you would, because you're just awesome.
You guys are great. You're bringing it back for me. I definitely still and will always love my pilot that came with me to the Paralympics. So I totally understand the bond and, yeah, just the gratitude and all of that. That's so great. So you came, did you finish fourth then?
So there's no fourth place in judo. It's there's first, second, third, and so there's two thirds, two fifths, and two sevenths. And I came in fifth. Okay. Because of the way that the medal matches and the pools work up, there's just no fourth or sixth place.
Okay. But, and that's still amazing in the world. Hello.
It was amazing.
No, it's a small community. It was a small world. The biggest accomplishment I ever made was after that, because it was, and I wish Allie was there. That she was the only element missing. But it was the world championships where I finally secured a medal against some of the really difficult. I beat the girl who beat me for the bronze. That was like the ultimate cherry on the cake. And I didn't just beat her. I think I choked. No, that was in Tashkent. I think I got a palm. I can't remember now. But anyways, I just beat her. That's all I remember.
That's sweet.
But it was that girl. So the only thing that would have been sweeter would be to have Allie there with me.
In translation, Ippon is like the sort of the ultimate way to win, the perfectly executed technique in judo.
It's actually really funny as you guys are, you know, talking and using the terms as they fall in naturally. I actually still remember some of them because obviously growing up, Allie was doing judo all the time. Several of our other friends also ended up joining over the years for varying lengths of time. So I've been to a few practices even. I was never... Because of the nature of judo, there's a lot of sweeping and throwing and hitting the ground. And I have very thin retinas at high risk of detachment. So that wasn't a thing. It really sucked, actually, because like a bunch of, several of my closer friends were in it. I was like, that's cool. But I literally can't. I think it's the one time where I was actually like, you know, like I didn't really care. I couldn't do soccer. I didn't really, you know. I wasn't really into soccer anyway, so it didn't matter. But I kind of really wanted to do that. But, you know, safety-wise, I really shouldn't. Didn't mean, like I said, like I didn't do, you know, I did a few, like, attempted break fall drills with them sometimes. And later, what my mom and I ended up finding was a style of karate that was mostly upright. You know, we did learn some sweeps and stuff, but primarily... you know, kicks and punches based. So I did end up doing several years of a martial art later, I guess kind of as a result of like seeing everybody else do judo. There wasn't, again, coming from Hunter Mile, there's not really a lot of options.
I've never really done any martial arts. So I'm curious, like, do you get beat up a lot in training?
I think them more than like the karate I was in, we sparred, but like we had gloves and mouth guards and everything. And I'm sure they have mouth guards too, but it's, they're not attempting to hit you in the face. It might happen by accident, but.
Priscilla has given me her fair share of bruises.
Oh yeah. And I'm pretty sure I a few eye pokes. I remember some of them.
So when, like, if you guys are in training and you're, I don't know if it's called sparring or whatever.
Yep, that's totally.
Okay. Okay. Is your goal always to fight her off, or is it you're both going for the win Or like, what, explain this to me.
So it depends. Like when I'm there for my own training in, you know, pursuing my own athletic goals, you know, typically when you're sparring, you're trying to fight that person's style. You're trying to throw them, you know, you're trying to win effectively. Mm-hmm. With the caveat that in practice, if somebody does a nice fall, does a nice technique, you just take the fall in part to preserve your body. You don't want to be spinning out of everything in practice. But with Priscilla, there was a tiny bit of a different element to it because my role was, more as her training partner than it was necessarily about my judo. So there were days when it was totally about my judo and I just ignored what Priscilla was feeling and just fought her, for sure. There was that.
But which made me stronger.
But as we led up, especially to the Olympics, when it switched from being us sort of co-training partners to it being my role to develop Priscilla, then you kind of, you sense how she's doing that day and, you know, okay, maybe I'm going to fight a little lighter today, or no, I'm going to like 100% throw her as hard as I can, or whatever the case may be. But, we were reasonably well matched. So we've had lots of good brawls.
Oh yeah.
What are your personal judo goals, Allie?
I'd say I'm retired now.
Okay.
So that would have been about 2018 would have been the last year I competed. As I sort of transitioned into medical school, I just stepped back from competitive judo and I'm now strictly recreational. If it worked in my life, I would come back in a heartbeat and be Priscilla's training partner. I don't know if that's in the cards. But at the time I was never like at the level Priscilla is in terms of, I wasn't a viable, like Olympic candidate, but I competed internationally for Canada and got some kind of minor results and then medaled in Canada a number of times.
That's just a weird coincidence, but my guide from the Paralympics went on to be a doctor. And you're in medical school.
It surprises me absolutely not at all that out of our friends, guess who is going to become the doctor?
Yeah, the empathy, the compassion, the wisdom, the smarts, yeah, the intelligence. I mean, it's all wrapped
the beauty.
Up in Allie.
Yeah. I'm blushing.
Okay, so how, I think I know the answer to this, but how is Paralympic judo different than regular judo?
Allie could answer this one better because I don't have experience in the regular world.
Okay.
Sure. So, I mean, to me, the only difference is sort of the start of the fight. So in able-bodied judo, there's a whole element. You start about, to be honest, I want to say 2 meters apart approximately. They say the word and you start. And so you kind of circle each other and then there's a series of gripping. And that component site is important too. You need to know where their hands are going and, you know, you're aiming. Versus in Paralympic judo, you start with a standardized equal grip. And then from there, the judo is relatively similar. There's nuances in terms of maybe there's less footwork because, you know, you don't see the feet quite the same way. But, you know, when I fought Priscilla, I was never really adjusting my judo. It was the same, with the exception of if we lost grip, you would stop until you had a grip again. You know, like you don't jump her from behind. That's not cool. But I think that's, you know, that's just common sense. And then I think the big difference came in just in how you learn it, because judo is taught very visually. It's like, they'll say things like, okay, put your arm here and pull like this, which is not terribly helpful if you don't have the visual cues. And so the only difference for me was they would show a technique and then Priscilla and I would go off to our corner to practice it and I would just do it on her.
Yeah.
Feel it and sort of translate it a little bit more in like sort of tactile, that's the word I'm looking for, terms, as opposed to like visual things.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever try doing judo with a blindfold on or with your eyes closed?
Yeah, we actually did this growing up, not infrequently, as a way to teach kids to feel judo. Judo is a very timing, like instinct sport. And so we used to blindfold one kid. And then the other person's job was to kind of look out for them, make sure that you don't throw somebody into a wall or into somebody. And so this is something we did not as a nod to visual impairment or to the Paralympics. I don't even know that I knew that that was a thing at 7 or 8 when we were doing this. It was just a way to develop good judo and have, you know, and sort of a fun activity for kids. And so it was really no, like, again, it was no leap for me to imagine judo without sight.
And interestingly, to add to that, the people that come from out west seem to be the most empathetic and kind, easy to work with people in judo that I experienced that come to Montreal.
Shout out to the West Coast. Thank you.
We like love your culture. Whatever it is, I like it.
So Priscilla, are you still competing?
Yes, I'm still competing. My next competition scheduled for February. Keyword scheduled. So we'll see what happens with that. There's been some that have already been canceled that were supposed to be in January. And so we'll see. Then we'll have one in Great Britain and one in Azerbaijan in the spring. But again, everything is up in the air. And Tokyo is going to be for us. I'll fight on August 27th, I think it is.
Wow. And what does training look like right now with COVID? That must be really challenging.
We're training in bubbles. So there's if you can picture like 4 surfaces of the tatami, so an extremely large mat area, picture an entire gymnasium with nothing but mats on the floor. That gets divided into 5. And so some are bigger, some are smaller. And then in those sections, there's bubbles of people training. So you only train with the same people every single day. You're not allowed to just cross bubbles or cross the tape. And so I have right now with me 2 training partners. I just got my 2nd one yesterday, and I'll get my 3rd one in a couple of weeks. And then we'll be a group of 4 that train together until we're allowed to cross the bubble line. Mm-hmm.
So now that you've been to the Paralympics, are people lined up to be your training partner?
Oh, no, not at all. That no. changes nothing. No,
oh, too bad.
No.
Oh, that's
but you know what's beautiful, though? Some of the younger ones who are both competitive or I've seen them at tournaments. I remember one time going to the last able-bodied tournament that I did here in Quebec. And I lost both my fights. I fought hard, but I lost both of them to the last one to Yumi. She's an extremely good judoka. And anyways, she cremated me, but I did almost choke her, but she totally cremated me. But the fact that I almost choked her made me feel good. But anyway, I was a little disappointed because I lost both my fights and it was like no wins, you know? So I'm walking back the walk of shame, and this young boy, like probably 10 or 12, runs up from behind me and my coach who's guiding me back. And he's like, "Hey, it's Priscilla, right?" And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Really good job today. You fought so good." And I was so stunned because I was like, I lost. How did I fight? And I was old, you know, I was like 20 something, 27, 28. And this kid is telling me that I did a good job and I knew I lost both. And I'm like, how can you? And it took a couple of days for me to really absorb what he meant by that. And that to this day still brings me encouragement. So even though there might be many people that refuse to be my training partner, that might refuse to work with me or gripe about it, I know that somewhere out there, someone's watching and they see the struggle and they admire that. And I pray that in some way it inspires them to do the same in their circumstances one day, you know, if they have a tough time with something, that they'll draw from that and remember those moments.
I would like really echo that. I think Priscilla has the challenge of being a pioneer, and in the sense that she's experiencing a number of barriers and frustrations. And I think it would be easy to get bogged down in all the frustration and some of the almost rejection that happens, you know, at the training center. But there is also a huge like following for Priscilla. People love her. She both, you know, because she's successful, but also just because she's super kind and just a lovely way about her. And so I think that she's doing a huge amount for her community, for judo in general, and for the like general sense at the INS.
I think we have, you know, a lot of our listeners are maybe teens who are blind or partially sighted or parents of kids with visual impairments, if somebody wanted to get into judo and had a visual impairment, like how would they do that? What would you recommend?
Number one, go to the Judo Canada website, judocanada.ca, or their Facebook page, and look for, get in touch with any of the coaches you see on there. But Andre Sadage, so it's Anders Edge. For those that are using screen readers, it'll say Anders Edge Sadage. He is the coach for VI, but any one of those coaches that you see on that, on the Facebook account, or just send a little message to them, they'll put you in touch with him. You can also find me on Facebook or Twitter and message me about it, and which is just P Gagne 86. And I will get you in touch with Andre as well.
Am I too old?
You are not too old. I don't know how old you are, but if I started at 23 and I'm going on my second games, I think the book is open.
Yeah, I know Paralympic athletes tend to be a bit older than, not a bit, they just tend to be older. It's like,
yeah,
sometimes because you acquire a disability later on in life or whatever, but.
And it's like that internationally, FYI. Some of the top judo players right now in the visually impaired world, the twins in judo just turned 43, I think, and they're still competing.
Wow. So, Allie, you're in medical school. Priscilla, what do you do when you're not doing judo?
I've actually been involved with different things. I volunteer with my church, especially during COVID, making phone calls to seniors and seeing if they need medical, like if they need someone to go pick up prescriptions or do groceries. And we just, you know, just checking in with them because they don't have internet or they don't want to use it. Mm-hmm. And then outside of that, I've also started a creative writing class at night. And so that's been really cool. I've started to write a bit of a memoir, or I don't want to call it a memoir. I'm too young. It's like, there's nothing left in life after a memoir, but just like a book about my journey thus far and how the lessons I've learned along the way kind of thing. So that's taken up quite a bit of time. And then I do some public speaking pre-COVID and even since COVID, just through Zoom, zoomed into some school assemblies or videos for the CPC, Canadian Paralympic Committee. Just wherever I can get involved, I get involved. I keep very busy.
That's awesome. I can't wait to read your book. I think it'll be very interesting. I do want to ask one other thing, which might be controversial or whatever, but I'm just curious. You guys obviously had to spend a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. Did you ever fight?
That's funny. We actually had even more time together. Priscilla's house had her apartment building had a, I lived with Priscilla during the summer that we trained together for the Paralympics. Cause I was living in Alberta and came back for the summer to train with her. And so I was a little bit broke and she very graciously, let me stay with her.
And you were so, broke because of me though.
And so I stayed with her. We lived together all day long and trained together. It was no problem. But then she had a fire in her apartment building. And so we had to move. We had to find a new place. And what we ended up finding there was some stress there, I think.
And first was the hotel too, even before.
Oh yes. I forgot about that. We had to stay in a hotel for 2 weeks, maybe.
Close, yeah.
I don't know. And so we lived in very close quarters then. And we never fought, but we did have some quiet moments where we would just not talk to each other.
Yeah. Which I think is normal. Like that's totally normal.
No, I'd say overall we got along really well, despite we lived in this little apartment that we subletted for a month. It was one giant room. So you never got away from each other.
Yeah, there's invisible walls.
Mm-hmm. So it was an adventure, but overall lovely. And Priscilla would bring me coffee when I was studying. I would leave my coffee mug accidentally in the microwave. And so she adapted to me, which is not the way it's supposed to be. I would leave my coffee mug in the coffee in the microwave and she would learn to like sweep the microwave to remove out inevitably forgotten coffee mug and then heat it up and bring it to me. So I have nothing to complain about. She was a total gem to live with.
No. And you know, she had extra stress. I I just had the stress of finding an apartment and the games and training. That's all I had to do.
Ah, just the Paralympics, no big deal.
Yeah. But Miss Allie over here was studying for her MCAT, so, and deadlines and essays and like things that she academically needed to get done, which are hard enough to do in the best of circumstances. So imagine, you know, and we had a really cool system. During the day when it was light, she would study, but she'd also help with the house, because we had to pack it all up and leave. And then I couldn't see anyway. So at night, there's no electricity, right? So at night, she would study and I would do the house stuff. So I feel like we worked really, really well in spite of it all, but she definitely had the bigger stress with the whole MCAT situation.
I would disagree with the having the more stress. I feel like being a Paralympic athlete is a pretty big deal, but we worked well together. I agree with that.
One challenge I had with my guide was, like, when we were at home, I knew where everything was. I was very independent. But then when we would travel to another country, you know, we're staying in an unfamiliar area, I all of a sudden needed a lot more assistance than normal. And that was definitely a shock to my guide the first time we traveled. Did you guys ever experience that? Kind of like, for me, I didn't like that I needed so much help. And I think my guide also was kind of like, wow, you need a lot of help. And I think we both felt a bit awkward about it and didn't really know how to articulate it at the time. And it caused a bit of friction on that first trip until we sort of figured that out. Did you guys have anything like that?
I don't think so. I mean, I know that you helped me get my food a lot, but even like we would do grocery shopping. So I feel like, but you know, you could speak for you.
The only moment I think some of the friction after the fire for me was that adjusting. You went from your apartment where you knew everything day to day, you were 100% independent, to we had to find a new place to live. We had to we figured out sticky tacks on the stove so that you knew what button was what. And
about that. Yep.
So there was an adjustment period there for about a month after the fire where I think you needed a little more help. And
finding a new grocery store too.
Yeah. We were living on top of each other practically. So yeah. There's a little bit of how much of, you know, I want to help and I want to give you your independence. And, you know, so there was two people living together stress. And then there was also you needing a little more help. And I was trying to be sensitive about it, giving the help, but also letting you figure that out on your own. So I feel like not so much the first time we traveled together. I think it was more that finding a new apartment after the fire that for me was a little bit of tension there.
I agree. I think that's the only time we ever felt tension was exactly that window of time.
Yeah. It is a fine line. I feel like for people who are sighted, who are close to us, that want to be helpful, but not too helpful, but don't want to ignore the fact that you're struggling right now, but also don't want to take away your independence. Right. It's really tricky for people. I wouldn't necessarily want to be on that side of the situation.
And you know, I've learned to this day, and I learned this lesson very young when I was still a kid in elementary school, but some people are in your life and you want them as a friend. So you don't ask them for help for things. You'd rather suffer and keep them as a friend than burn them out.
Yes.
And I felt like that from the time from grade 8 right to this day. I still choose, you know, who am I going to ask what of? And you kind of get a sense of, okay, they're about to be burnt out, so I better switch this up. But Allie, no matter how many times I would feel like, oh, I really shouldn't, she just never once made me feel like I was burning her out with that. And she was so open. We had such an open and honest dialogue, I think, too, that I never really worried about it. She would offer it and she probably got annoyed with me. Are you sure? But she, she's a person. She's probably, I'm just thinking on the spot right now, but I think she's one of the very few people, maybe one of two or three people in my entire 35 years of life almost, that I can feel fully comfortable and confident that I'm not going to burn her out and she's not going to run away. And if she's tired, she'll just tell me, do it on your own right now, you know, and it's okay. And I'm fine with it. And I really respect that about her. She's nailed that.
Thanks, Priscilla. Yeah. And I think I never will get tired, but just because our it has to do with, you know, how much I get back in our relationship and what our friendship is worth. I'm willing to put in a huge amount because I get a huge amount back. And so it's never been an effort or a tally or anything like that.
And you never made it feel that way, so.
Oh man, you guys, you're like,
aren't we just so beautiful?
Oh no,
tissue.
My heart is full. I do feel a little like tearing up right now. I wish, I totally understand what you're saying, Priscilla. I definitely have felt that. I still do, I think. I hear you. I pick and choose what I ask of who. And you do kind of get a sense of like, oh, you're huffing a little bit when you answer me. I feel like I should probably not ask you again. Right. And yeah, it can be exhausting actually, kind of always keeping track of all of that. So it's nice when you do find somebody where you don't feel that. That's so great. Well, thank you guys. I have learned so much. I didn't know anything about judo, so I had a lot to learn, but I really appreciate you joining us today and sharing about your relationship and your sport and everything. Thank you so much. Been awesome.
Thanks for having us. I've really enjoyed this.
Yeah, well, you might have to come back when you finish your book and talk all about that.
God only knows when that's going to be.
That's okay. And thank you, Randy, for bringing this idea forward and bringing, I did know Priscilla before, but it was awesome to meet Allie. So thanks, Randy.
No problem. I'm really glad everyone can make it. I'm really glad I spend a little time chatting with my friend.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us.
You've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. If you have a question or comment or something you want to share with us, send us an email at limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. And please join us again next time.
For more information on Blind Beginnings and its mission to inspire and support children and youth who are blind or partially sighted and their families, visit www.blindbeginnings.ca.